And now, reading and writing and radio.
Oh, dear Lord, this is your creature, the fish. I would like to ask for a few things. Would you send about 50 gallons of fresh, clean water? Because yesterday I saw some junk in the river. Would you send a pound of worms or smaller fish? Because my food supply is running out. Please, dear Lord.
The author of that point of view was Daniel, a seventh grader at St. John's School, Marshfield. But it could be you.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host for the program is children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University, Jacqueline Jackson.
Daniel wrote his poem, A Fish's Prayer, in response to Prayers from the Ark by Carmen de Gastold. And he was taking the point of view of a fish in that poem, as in the Ark poems, there is the point of view of other creatures. Do you remember Prayer of the Little Ducks? Dear God, give us a flood of water. Let it rain tomorrow and always. Give us plenty of little slugs and other luscious things to eat. Protect all folk who quack and everyone who knows how to swim. In that book, not even Noah is forgotten. He says, Lord, what a menagerie. Between your downpour and these animal cries, one cannot hear oneself think. The days are long, Lord. All this water makes my heart sink. And he goes on asking for patience to bear with what the Lord has put on him. I myself, in my book, Spring Song, took each animal and tried to show how he felt about spring, his view of spring. I tried to put myself in that animal's skin. You can put yourself in other points of view of people as well as animals. There's a poem by Robert Louis Stevenson that goes like this. Little Indian, Sioux or Crow, little frosty Eskimo, little Turk or Japanese, oh, don't you wish that you were me? You have seen the scarlet trees and the lions overseas. You have eaten ostrich eggs and turned the turtles off their legs. Such a life is very fine, but it's not so nice as mine. You must often, as you trod, have wearied not to be abroad. You have curious things to eat. I am fed on proper meat. You must dwell beyond the foam, but I am safe and live at home. And then the first verse is repeated. Another poem by Robert Louis Stevenson is, When I am grown to man's estate, I shall be very proud and great, and tell the other girls and boys not to meddle with my toys. Now, in both those poems, here is a grown man writing them who is taking the point of view of a very young child. And this very young child in Little Indian, Sioux or Crow has the very natural feeling of young children that what he is used to is the norm, that this is what is, and everything else is strange or curious. You have curious things to eat. I am fed on proper meat. You're not at home, but I'm at home. I don't see this as a racist poem. I see this as a point of view of a small child, and the tragedy of it is that people grow up continuing to think that way when they should have grown out of it. Of course, it's very obvious in the Man's Estate poem that when you grow up, you are not going to be concerned about telling the other girls and boys not to meddle with your toys. But this, too, is tragic in that many a grown-up has different sorts of toys that he is telling the other grown-ups not to meddle with. It's valuable for a writer to be able to take other points of view besides his or her own, be it scales or fur or human skin, to see things in another person's sort of way. Everything's written from some sort of point of view. Sometimes the author is just plainly, merely himself, telling it with an I. That's called the first person. I did this, I did that. I thought this. But a writer can also write in the first person as if he were someone else. Daniel's poem is in the first person. He is the fish. He's writing as if he were the fish. Huckleberry Finn tells his story in the first person. You don't know about me without you have read a book by the name of The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, but that ain't no matter. That book was made by Mr. Mark Twain, and he told the truth mainly. There was things he stretched, but mainly he told the truth. And Mark Twain has a great deal of fun in that book, pretending to be Huck and telling it in the first person. I had a lot of fun when I wrote my book Missing Melinda by making it not only first person, but double first person. There are twins in that story, and it starts out, "My name is Cordelia. When Ophelia and I first thought about writing a book, we were up in a tree, arguing. Twins are just like sisters, only more so. Arguing over what sort of book we were going to write. Then the next chapter turns out to be by her sister. Now it falls my turn," this is Ophelia writing, "to continue the piteous tale of missing Melinda. Cordelia wrote long enough, and it's her own fault she only got as far as the attic stairs. Also, her writing doesn't have enough conversation. Our book will have plenty of pictures, and my chapters, at least, will be mostly conversation, starting just as soon as I tell you that some of Cordelia's statements are odious lies. However, I will write the honest truth and let you decide for yourself about people who don't change their shirts and whose faces are always covered with chocolate smears." So you see, I was having fun letting the two girls comment on each other as well as on the action in this double first person. Now, they change their style of writing after a bit. Here's chapter 3 by Ophelia again. She puts in an author's note. "I get tired of writing I and we all the time. Cordelia can write her chapters any way she likes, but I'm going to write mine as if I were somebody else. Oswald Bastable does it in The Would-Be Goods, and also in the other books he's written. He's always saying Oswald said or Oswald thought, so I will too, only Ophelia." Well, by Ophelia changing her style of writing, poor Cordelia feels she has to do something, so here's the beginning of her next chapter. Note by the other author. "I think it's confusing when two people are trying to write a book together to have one person saying I and we and the other refusing to. But now Ophelia has the last chapter all written and won't change it, so I have agreed to try this one her way and see how it goes. But don't blame me if it spoils the book." So there you see, fun with the first person. Now, you can write a book, I guess, in second person, but I've never seen it done. That's you, the second person, and you would have to say all the way through the book, "Now you did this and you did that," as if the person that was reading the book was the person doing the action. Now, I have actually seen it once, and that's in A.A. Milne's Winnie the Pooh. He's telling the stories to Christopher Robin, and he says, "And then you did such and such, and you did such and such," and then Christopher answers and says, "Oh, I did," and is very pleased. But even A.A. Milne doesn't keep it up, except in short paragraphs here and there where he is directing his remarks right to Christopher Robin, who is listening to the story. Most stories are written in third person. That's he, she, it. You can still be talking about yourself, but you pretend it isn't. Like Oswald Bastable would say, "Oswald did this and Oswald did that." And part of the fun of E. Nesbitt's Bastable books is figuring out that Oswald is actually the one telling the story. And you get clues to that because Oswald is always right and Oswald's thoughts you know. And so that is the way you can tell that Oswald is telling the story. You can be somebody else, you can be yourself, but you can also be nobody. You can be unlimited. You can be everywhere and know everything. You're writing as if you're omniscient, which means you know everything. While you are everybody, you are, in fact, nobody. You're not any one person. Although sometimes an author puts himself into a book in a sort of chatty way. commenting on the action to the reader. You've perhaps read those. Old-fashioned books are often that way. Now, you and I know, dear reader, but our hero was unaware that such and such had just happened. So that the author and you are in cahoots, cozily, usually. I visited a writing class once that was conducted by a children's author named Jean Fritz, and they were discussing a story told in the third person where the point of view was impersonal, this all-knowing, godlike way. And Mrs. Fritz exclaimed, "I get awfully tired of being nobody." I, too, like it better, both as a reader and as a writer, to have a defined, a limited point of view. As a reader, I identify more closely. I'm Huck, or I'm Marcy in my own pale-faced Redskins. I usually feel the story more keenly. As a writer, I find it more challenging to have a limited point of view. The problem is how to get all the material in that you want to get in when you're taking it from a limited point of view, because you can't say, meanwhile, back at the ranch, because your hero, you see, is not back at the ranch. Your hero is right here and doesn't know what's going on. So you have to find other ways of getting your material in. I find that I write a story more deeply when I take one point of view, because I am then going through the experience through one person rather than trying to spread myself over a lot of people and see how they react. Try looking at your library books. See what point of view they're written from. Sometimes you'll get thrown out of it, more often by an unskilled or unnoticing author. It'll be muddy. The author won't know what point of view that he's writing from. But certain ones I know are very clear. For instance, Robert Lawson has written two books, one called Ben and Me and the other called Mr. Revere and I. And Ben and Me is told from the point of view of a mouse that lives with Ben Franklin, whereas Mr. Revere and I is from his patrician horse, who discusses the whole story of the coming of the Redcoats. It's a little harder in third person to determine who is telling the story, as in the case of Oswald Bastable. When I wrote Paleface Redskins, I wrote from the point of view of Marcy, and that there is nothing in that book, I don't think, that wouldn't have come through Marcy's eyes, ears, other senses, overhearing, remembering, interpreting. So that as you read that book, you unconsciously, I hope, identify with Marcy. And if you were really looking who is telling this story, you would realize that this story is Marcy's story. I suggest that for writing, you try playing a game called Skins. You put yourself into somebody else's skin. Here is from Did You Carry the Flag Today, Charlie? By Rebecca Caudill. And Charlie is a little boy going to summer session pre-kindergarten, and he runs out into the rain several times and finally gets banished out into the warm rain so that he won't drip all over the library books. And while he is there, he curls up into a ball outside, and the children think he is crying. But when he comes back in, he wasn't crying at all. "You know what I was doing out there?" asked Charlie. "I was making out like I was a rock sitting there on the side of the hill in the rain. And I was making out like I was dusty where people had stepped on me and snakes had curled around me and lizards and spiders and ants had crawled over me and squirrels had cracked hickory nuts on me and left the shells lying on me. And I was hot, too, and the rain fell on me and washed me off and made me feel so cool and clean. Do you reckon a rock could feel that?" Or take Harriet in my favorite book, Harriet the Spy. Harriet has to be an onion in a school pageant. That night after supper, she tried to practice being an onion. She started by falling down several times, making a great bumping noise each time. The idea was to fall in a rolling way, the way an onion would, and then roll around in a complete circle several times, then roll slowly to a stop, the way an onion would if you put it down on the table. And her parents come up to see what the noise is, and she explains that she's being an onion. "I told you, I'm being an onion. It's a pretty noisy onion. I can't help it. I can't do it right yet. Miss Barry says when I do it right, I won't make a sound." When her father comes up and watches her being an onion, he tells her that she can't really be a good onion unless she feels like an onion. And Harriet says that she doesn't feel like an onion, whereupon her father gets down on the floor and tries to be an onion with her. And he says, "I'm trying to feel like an onion. The closest I can get is a scallion." Harriet tried to feel like an onion. She found herself screwing her eyes up tight, wrapping her arms around her body, then buckling her knees and rolling to the ground. She rolled round and round the room. It wasn't bad at all, this being an onion. She bumped into her father, who started to laugh. Her father started being an onion in earnest, rolling and rolling. So there they both are, you see, being onions. So try taking another person's point of view in the stories that you write. Choose your grandfather, your baby sister, your mother, your teacher, a toothpaste tube, and see what it feels like to be in their skin. Be dog for a day. But like Harriet and Charlie and Marcy, take time to feel like a rock, to feel like an onion, to feel like an Indian maid before you write it. If you're going to be a tree, drench yourself in what it means to be a tree. Think about all the aspects of treeness, the bark, the height, the wind. Make yourself a tree as much as you can as before you try to write, and then see how tree-ish you can be. One last thing. It's more than valuable to your writing to be able to do this. In trying to feel what another person feels, in trying to understand his thinking, to walk a mile in his moccasins, as the term is, you become empathetic. You have empathy. And that means that you can feel into other people, that you can be more sympathetic and more understanding as a human being.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.